Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Wade, it opens wide for Wade. Whoa, dunk! Forney blocked his dunk!
Here's Wade against Green.
Euro step. Basket.
Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor of AllYouCanEat.com. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, David?
I'm doing great. I'm not tanking the postseason, regardless of what other bloggers have advised me to do, so I'm ready to go.
If it's any consolation, I'd pick you with my lottery pick.
Oh, man.
I tanked the whole year. I tanked the whole year. You're a one-and-doner. That explains all my writing from this last Miami Heat season. I was tanking.
Towel early, huh?
I did.
Nice. You're the Sam Hinkie of bloggers.
That's me. I try to most efficient way possible. Just really bad, really short bursts. All right. Increase my chances for a home run every once in a while. Speaking of Sam Hinkie, he is the general manager of the 76ers.
Yes, he is.
And the 76ers are a team that lost to the Miami Heat last night. And the Miami Heat are a team that are not in the playoffs. How about that for a segue?
That was pretty smoothly done, I think.
Really? Because I thought I tanked that one, too.
No, I think you found your 83rd win of the season, so I think you're ready to go.
Beautiful. So,
the 76ers, they didn't knock off the Heat. It was a tense game because there was a lot at stake, wasn't there?
I was kind of surprised that they didn't play better earlier in the game. I don't know. They were kind of in an interesting position where they could try to lose like they do and try to increase their odds for that first overall pick, or they could try to win and hope that Brooklyn lost and end up with Miami's pick. So I thought they were going to come out guns blazing, because to me, I'd rather have a whole extra pick as opposed to a little bit of a better chance to increase your top three pick to the first or second pick in the draft. Right?
Yeah, I guess so.
I thought that was kind of interesting. But it doesn't really matter because the Nets ended up winning. So, I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting. But it was also a lot of fun to watch the Heat just play their scrubs for 48 minutes. I thought that was amazing.
How many players did wind up actually going onto the floor?
Six.
It was like seven, right? Six or seven?
I'm pretty sure it was only six. Haslam only played 7 minutes. Chalmers was supposed to play, but he didn't. Pretty sure. So, I mean, Beasley played for 48 minutes straight. And I kind of was wondering, you know, they weren't going to play Wade, Whiteside, Dang. And I was like, well, who are they going to play? Because you can't just play five guys for the entire game. And that's essentially what they did. Zoran Dragic came out for 7 minutes. Haslam came in. And that was about it. But for the most part, it was Zoran, Tyler Johnson, James Ennis, Michael Beasley, and Henry Walker. 48 minutes straight. I can't believe they actually came. That's a really impressive win by the Heat, just by those players. Because they must have been exhausted by the end of that game.
Philadelphia, they went through their regular rotation, right? I mean, they're just that bad.
Yeah, they did their regular thing. But if they were trying to lose that game, and I know like the players on the court aren't trying to lose.
Right, technically.
Right. They're just bad. But I don't know. I thought that the Sixers would be better at losing because they've been practicing doing it as an organization the entire year. Last 3 years or so.
Well, I think Sixer fans would argue that, you know, again, maybe there's an overall direction and goal for each season, But again, what you just hinted at, the players themselves don't feel that way. They're going to give their maximum effort. They just lack, on a regular basis, the talent and ability to pull out a victory. That's not to say that they're actively missing shots or that they're throwing passes away on purpose or not getting that rebound. They just often don't have the ability to do so. So I guess that just speaks to the quality of player or the lack thereof on their roster.
It's kind of puts them in an interesting situation. Like, you know that your organization wants you to lose, basically, right? Like, that's not a secret. But as a player, you don't want to lose because you don't want your organization to draft a really good player that could potentially take your job.
Oh, I mean, there's so much to look at it from that perspective. I think fans get caught up in the whole feeling of wanting to win. But I think even the players say this, and I know that winning is a great feeling. But let's be honest with you. I mean, let's be honest here. I think more often than not, these players just want to get paid.
Hmm.
So I think that's their main goal. Like, I know they have to say to the media and to, you know, by extension, the fans, that the most important goal for them is winning. But let's be honest, that's probably very, 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 you know, I guess second or third on down the list. Getting paid, staying healthy, these kinds of things matter the most to these players. And for these guys that are on the roster, yeah, again, they're being told that they want to lose or that the organization has this mentality, but they want to do well enough on a nightly basis where they can translate, you know, a 10-day contract or, you know, a 1-year or 2-year deal into a longer-term deal where they're going to get paid, etc. These are the goals for these people. So any opportunity for them to go out there and play, well, I think they're going to take it. How that affects the whole impact of the team and whether or not they wind up drafting another player, well, you can't prevent that. I mean, the Sixers were going to draft somebody anyway, whether it's a first pick or a fourth pick or a 20th pick. Chances are they're going to wind up picking somebody that could compete for a job just like they're competing. I mean, the guys that are on the floor right now were second rounders or maybe they weren't drafted at all, or maybe they were just D-League prospects. So, we've seen over the course of the past few seasons and over the course of NBA history that just because you're selected, you know, within the first 10 picks of the draft, there's no guarantee you're going to be a great player. So, I mean, I don't think there's any concern there that they're going to draft a player. I mean, look at Joel Embiid. I mean, sure, he has all the hype and maybe a lot of that talent, but he spent the whole year until last night, you know, holding a clipboard. So, I mean...
But he's also taking a roster spot, which is kind of... That's kind of what what we're both saying here is, even though he's not playing, he's still holding onto that roster spot. And really, as long as he's not healthy, he's probably going to have a roster spot because they're not going to know if he's good or not, right? At least for the foreseeable future. So, if you're one of those second round picks or something, you might get bumped just because of the potential that a guy like Embiid can offer. And I guess what I'm kind of getting at here is that Miami played those five guys that entire game, and everybody knew what Miami was doing, right? Like, all of a sudden, sure, they're playing these five guys, and they're not playing Wade. But those five guys wanted not only, like, winning, not winning, like you're saying, it's not really the point, but they want to go out there and compete because they're essentially interviewing for a job for next season right now. So, or at least for some of them are interviewing for a job. You know, like Beasley, his contract doesn't go through next year. He's got a team option. Guys like Tyler Johnson are, you know, like, they're looking for playing time next year and kind of a job because it's not going to hurt the Heat a lot if they do waive that contract that he has. So it's kind of an interesting situation. So I knew, like, a lot of Heat fans were like, oh, they just lose this game. We got the 10th pick. It's in the bag. But it's harder than that. And when you see Eric Spoelstra just kind of sitting there on the sideline, not really kind of getting up and arguing every foul call and stuff like that, that's got to be just a weird position if you're a player.
Yeah.
Knowing that your team basically put you on the floor to lose.
Well, they didn't have to worry about that. And I think Spoelstra had some comments regarding that even from a coaching perspective, you know, you can't pretend to get these guys excited to play because in the back of your mind you're hoping that they're gonna lose anyway. And then finally, once you find out that Brooklyn won,
mm-hmm,
then there's a little less pressure there, and I think he actually relayed that to the guys that were out there actually playing. Yeah. So it was an interesting turn of events there, especially from an organizational perspective, because, like, we had talked about this early in the season when Miami was having their struggles and they seemed like maybe they'd missed out on a playoff spot. I mean, this is an organization that really prides itself as far as, you know, being a winning culture, et cetera. They're not the Sixers. They're not teams that embrace mediocrity for a long period of time or anything like that. So it was hard to picture them tanking, which is basically what they did last night. And, you know, it was a very interesting close to a very interesting season.
So I know that we didn't plan a finishing each other's sandwiches segment. However, I'm feeling generous. I know you're hungry. So I'm going to lay out a sandwich for you really quick.
All right.
I feel blank about the Heat not being in the playoffs.
Absolutely fine.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely fine. It's one of those things where there was only one matchup that I could have really looked forward to, and that would have been against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And assuming that maybe everybody had somehow taken the next day or two to regain their full health. Not Chris Bosh, not Josh McRoberts, obviously, but like everybody that was on a roster, that, you know, Hassan Whiteside's hand would magically heal, that Dwayne Wade's knees would get at least to 90%, that Luol Deng would get through whatever it is that he's getting through. That was the only matchup that I could have actually seen myself getting interested in because of the drama, because of the chance to match up against LeBron and the Cavaliers, etc. The chance to go up against the Atlanta Hawks, even if we had managed to win two games, I get the feeling that Atlanta would have dispatched us pretty handily, and there wouldn't have been any interesting storyline. I think for me, actually, it would have been a great opportunity to really dissect how Atlanta was going to be able to progress as they move through the playoffs, because I didn't see much of a chance of Miami advancing past the first round. Like, they couldn't have played any opponent. The best opponent that they could have matched up against was Cleveland, simply because of Wade's competitive fire, the home crowd, the energy, etc. Other than that, I just don't see how Miami would have made anything out of these playoffs. So having missed them, I'm okay with it. Now I'll flip it around. How do you feel about them missing the playoffs?
Relieved. Honestly, I'm just like, you know, the last 4 years of the Heat, you know, making it to the finals, winning a couple of them, those have been great, but it's also been a lot of stress as a fan, as a blogger, having to cover the team. It's a lot of work. And so from a selfish standpoint, I'm almost relieved that I could just sit back and enjoy these playoffs, especially because at least in the Western Conference, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun as early as the first round. So I'm relieved. I'm also, just like you, they're not making it past the first round. So what's the point of watching them just get their heads beaten in by the Cavs or the Hawks, where on the flip side, they miss the playoffs, but this is probably the best possible way it could have happened. They're able to win their game in a gritty, you know, exciting game. The Nets go ahead and win, so they don't have to worry about it. You know, so Heat fans were able to enjoy the last half quarter or so of that game, where they were kind of like, you know, scoreboard watching for the rest of the game. And then they get their 10th pick, most likely. So it's the best way to, we end the season on a nice win while also not sacrificing the asset, most likely. So I'm relieved. I'm just relieved. I don't want to watch this team anymore. It was painful to watch it. It was hard to watch. I didn't really see the entertainment side of it anymore. So I'm glad to just sit back, relax, and enjoy the NBA and all the good teams in it.
Am I being too much of a hater in saying that as the cherry on top, I'm really glad that the Indiana Pacers were eliminated as well?
That made it a lot better.
Yes, it did, didn't it? I mean, I know I'm swimming in the haterade right now, and I'm cool with that. But I mean, with the exception of seeing Paul George tweak his left leg and not his right leg yesterday during the game, the fact that the Pacers were slowly eliminated, that was a really, really nice touch to the end of the season for me anyway. Because, I mean, I just don't like the Pacers, I'll be honest with you.
You can always be honest with me, David. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited that at least the Celtics are in it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, I would rather this version of the Celtics be in it than this version of the Pacers. You know, if we're talking about Celtics with KG and Paul Pierce, just the fact that Paul Pierce doesn't play for that Boston team.
Sure.
I can root for that Celtics team. There's nobody I dislike on that team right now.
Evan Turner?
He's not even worthy of disliking. Like, it's just like, Evan Turner, like, how do you dislike him? It's just like, yeah, he's Evan Turner. He's kind of like a hit or miss guy.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
You know what I mean? It's like Paul Pierce was really good at one point. Rajon Rondo. Yeah, all those guys. So let's talk a little bit about this draft. The Heat will, they have a really, really good chance of keeping the pick. So, and it'll be the 10th pick or it'll be a top three pick. Personally, I think the NBA owes the Heat the first overall pick this year, or at least a top three pick because of that whole 2008 disaster. So they owe us.
Well, if it was good enough for Cleveland, I don't see why it's not good enough for us.
Or the Bulls that year.
Oh, good point, yeah.
You know what I mean? The Bulls, they jumped all the way to number one. Cleveland got a million of them. like, just because, why? And why does the NBA even want Cleveland to be good? If you believe in the conspiracy theory, Miami being good was a huge boom for the NBA. They gotta give the Heat the first pick. Can you? Who would the Heat take hypothetically with the first pick? Like, would they take Jahlil Okafor, Towns? Like, it doesn't even, like, Winslow. It doesn't even matter who they. But like, if they got the first pick, it would be insane. And I know we're talking about like it's impossible, but there's a 4% chance that the Heat end up in the top three.
Okay. Do they? Yes. I just answered my own question, and I know I shouldn't do that specifically because we're on a podcast where the people listening to our show cannot hear my thoughts. But I was just wondering to myself whether or not they would trade away the pick, and then I'm thinking to myself, no, why in the hell would they do that?
Well, that's an interesting... If they got in the top three, you mean?
Right, yeah. Okay. I mean, if they were able to get a guy like Okafor, you know, who seems to be a pretty good prospect, et cetera, you know, why not bring him along? Even if, you know, even as just insurance for the possible departure of Hassan Whiteside.
Right.
And then you've got all of a sudden a pretty decent talent who might translate into a pretty decent NBA player. And at the same time, you've got him on the cheap for the next four seasons. And then if Whiteside prices himself out of the running, you know, prices the Heat out of the running, you know, to re-sign him in 2016. Then you can, you know, wish him a fond farewell, and then bring along Whiteside, and bring along Okafor, and who knows what will happen to the backup center position.
At that point, Okafor is an offensive-minded post guy. Whiteside is defensive-minded for the most part. Like, he's got his moves, but, you know, you'd probably class him as a defensive center, right?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, so as at least a specialty, those two would probably work together. Then you could trade Chris Bosh and that max deal at that point. I would never, but it just opens up a whole thing.
Oh, where'd you come? I mean, that's out of left field there. You're totally blindsided me.
Trade Chris Bosh for Kobe.
Oh. Ooh.
No? All right. Moving on.
Never.
But with the 10th pick, I think a lot of Heat fans are excited about, I mean, even last night I'm on Twitter and there's guys talking about this player and that player. Looking for the next Kawhi Leonard, looking for the next, you know, Klay Thompson, whatever. But I can't help but think that the Heat might be better off trading that pick and trying to leverage that pick. I don't know how in on this idea I am. I'm not sold on it, but it's something that's been crossing my mind. You trade the pick for a pair of future first rounders, and now you're multiplying your assets, and that's a team that doesn't have many assets at all, and especially when you think about it in terms of future first round picks, because they've traded most of them. But if you can take one pick that you kind of just got out of thin air basically and can leverage and can translate that into two picks, that's a discussion worth having.
Do you think if they were able to wind up with a 10th pick, you think that's something that they could wind up turning into multiple first-round picks?
If it's, like, the right team, unfortunately, you know, there'd be a lot of protections on the picks that they'd trade for. But if there's a team that, like, it would have to be a draft night trade, you know, after the 9th pick is selected. And let's say
some team loves
Frank Kaminsky, right? And they're just like, we need to grab him before the Nets have the 11th pick. You know, or I'm assuming the Nets have the 11th pick. I haven't looked at it, but... you know, we got to trade up and get Kaminsky. We need Kaminsky. Maybe they trade a couple of future first rounders. I don't know. I just think it's an interesting conversation that really isn't being talked about. But if the opportunity presents itself, it wouldn't surprise me if Riley did it. Or even just trade it down in this draft and, you know, get a pick in this draft and a future first rounder. So instead of two future first round picks, just one, and you keep a pick this year. But I'm not sold basically on the idea that the Heat, if they get the 10th pick, which they have like a 90-ish% chance of keeping, that they're using it at 10. I'm not sold on that.
Are there, amongst the names that were tweeted at you yesterday, was there any of them that are appealing? Let's take a step back. Let's say you've got the 10th pick. You play GM Riley for a second. Nice suit, by the way.
Thanks.
What do you do with the 10th pick? Like, what do you think, not knowing who we can re-sign or sign, I mean, maybe we should do that then. And I know we probably shouldn't be doing this online right now, but let's think about it for a second. Like, what are the keys to building this team in the offseason? Maybe not necessarily who we'd pick, but let's see what the keys of the offseason are and what you would use that pick on. Not a specific player necessarily, but like, let's say if you got a gap to one of
the avenues to add players. That's it, because in terms of cap space, they have none.
Right.
So they have the mid-level exception.
Okay.
And they have the draft pick. That's basically the two avenues the Heat have. You know, you can get guys on the minimum contract, but to add, you know, the Heat aren't in the point of, they're not at the where they could sign Ray Allen for nothing and Mike, you know, all these guys for nothing. They're not that team anymore. So the mid-level exception and the draft pick. So now you figure you might have an idea of where you want to go with that mid-level exception, right? They're not going to be able to sign anybody with it at the time of the draft, but you might have an idea of where you want to go. And looking at the list of free agents, I don't know who the Heat are going to be able to get or what position, but there's a few guards, there's a few small forwards, and that I think is the spot that the Heat are looking at, is the perimeter. I think they feel solid with Whiteside in the middle, Bosch coming back, and McRoberts coming back. That's a solid three-man group. And you factor in what's left of Anderson, assuming he's probably about 80% of what he is this season, which is, you know, an exponential decline from where he was when he first got with the Heat. But he's still a solid rotation guy. Haslam has his minutes here and there. Maybe they add somebody with the mid-level that could kind of be a backup big, or even with a small contract, or talk about bringing somebody from Sioux Falls. So I think that's a need. Small forward and shooting guard, I think. Right? I mean, Tyler Johnson can kind of be the backup point guard. Chalmers can play some backup point guard. I think they're fine when it comes to point guard, especially if Dragic opts in. Well, only if Dragic opts in. If he doesn't, then they need a point guard. But I don't know. I know who I want. I kind of have an idea of who I want the Heat to take. And his name hasn't been floating around much. And I'm not sure I'm ready to reveal who it is, because I kind of want to do a big piece on it or talk about it when we talk more about the draft and we study the draft a little bit more, maybe on a future podcast. But the names that I'm hearing a lot are, like, guys that could be the next Kawhi Leonard.
Okay.
That's what everybody wants, though, right? Like, with that 10 to 15 range. Everybody wants Kawhi Leonard.
Sure.
And yeah, I think that I get nervous about that, because now you're looking specifically at his physical attributes, you know, when you're trying to draft a prospect. But, like, who else has the physical attributes of Kawhi Leonard? Lots of people. How many Kawhi Leonards are there? Only a handful of guys. You know, like, guys like Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, like, you know, to varying degrees, they're all a similar player. I just don't know how many of those are available in this draft. And I think you kind of get into, you might like be cornering yourself into a template if you're trying to just get the next Kawhi Leonard. Unfortunately, it also fits a huge need for the Heat.
It does.
A
long-limbed defender, athletic, etc.
Who's young, who can kind of carry the torch, maybe not completely, like, not maybe great on offense right now, but has potential to be better. You know, because Wade, Whiteside, Bosch, those guys can, Dragic, they can handle the load on offense right now. But I know Stanley Johnson from Arizona has been mentioned. There's a guy from UCLA that's been mentioned.
What was it about Leonard? I mean, I know the Spurs have a very vaunted front office and they've made some very good picks, etc. But what was it about Leonard that was so appealing that everybody else overlooked? And I know there's one like that every year, and it's not just his hands. I mean, his hands, as big as they are, whatever. But clearly, I know there was a whole system in place, and I know that there's a leadership just amongst the players themselves that could guide a young player who's receptive to that. And that's a huge thing. You have to take his personality into consideration. But what was it about Leonard that was so appealing that they decided to trade away their point guard, George Hill, in order to acquire somebody that, you know, they didn't think much of in Indiana?
Well, I think he was a major position of need for the Spurs, right? Because that was right after who was there? It was after Richard Jefferson. And then Reggie Jackson?
Reggie Jackson. No, Steven Jackson.
Steven Jackson, sorry. Steven Jackson.
Well, he had been left off the final playoffs roster. I think they had acquired him from, I can't even remember from whom at that point. But he had been a late season addition. I think he had been waived and they acquired him and then they left him off the playoff roster. But I mean, aside from him just being a position of need, and I know there's just a whole politics involved in that Indiana needs a point guard. They didn't need a small forward that needed some development because they already had Paul George and Danny Granger at that point. So they thought they were all set at the wing. They didn't seem the need to keep this guy Leonard on their roster. But somebody in the San Antonio's front office said, hey, there's a guy playing from a small school in California. I can't even recall exactly where Kawhi
San Diego was. State.
Right, it was San Diego State. Which isn't that where did James Ennis play? Long Beach
State. Long Beach State. Mm-hmm.
Completely different. Anyway, so San Diego State, you know, here's this kid from a small school. I mean, not really making much noise in the NCAA tournament. Still young, very raw, huge hands. Let's pick him. I mean, that's not nearly enough.
That was, and that was exactly what I'm saying. Is he was a physical guy, but he was also picked at 15th, right? So the Pacers picked him because he had the physical abilities, and they knew he was a good defensive player. He had the athleticism. It's just he was all the way down at 15, and that was a pretty good draft. I mean, this is the draft where Irving, Derek Williams, Cantor, you know, all these guys went. I'm looking at it right now. Tristan Thompson, Jonas Valanciunas, Jan Vesely. I mean, he was an actual prospect at one point. I mean, guys like Jimmer Fredette, who was huge at BYU, was picked at 10. So, and right before Leonard were the Morris twins.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that was a good draft. Makes sense. Yeah, I mean, a good draft, but then, yeah, you're right. Like, every year there's always going to be some franchise that screws up royally and picks a guy like Fredette, who you know is not going to be able to take it to that next level, regardless of how good a shooter he might be. This is the kid who's too small and is not, his skills are not going to translate to the next level.
Right.
And when you look at it from that simple a perspective, I know there's no exact science, you know, it almost seems like scouting should be a lot easier than it is, but, you know, somebody in San Antonio did it right.
It's, I mean, you look even... This guy has, but you look at Kemba Walker, who was taken before Fredette, and it was kind of the same thing. And Kemba Walker's been a nice player.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And he was taken 9th overall by Charlotte?
Mm-hmm. Back when they were the Bobcats.
Sure.
I don't know. And then, but you kind of see like a guy like Tobias Harris, he goes at 19, and he kind of was the same thing, right, as Kawhi. Physical specimen, had some potential. Thought like he has the size to be a defensive stopper. I mean, those are all the same things that they were saying about Tobias Harris.
And I know Magic fans love him, but he hasn't quite turned into the same player that.
No, he plateaued a little bit. Yeah, he plateaued the last year and a half. But I guess what I'm trying to get at here is, it's nice if you see somebody with Leonard's physical attributes, but we don't know if that's going to translate.
Well, sure.
And that's what, so the Heat are an interesting situation where you could get a guy who fits that small forward need, who might be a little bit raw, but think about who the Heat have at small forward now. James Ennis and potentially Michael Beasley to come back. Are those guys not raw? So how much raw meat are you going to put in one position? That's an iffy situation. Where on the flip side, you have a solid starting backcourt with Dragic and Wade, you have Chalmers to lean back on who could play either one of those positions. Tyler Johnson's shown us some things. Napier's going to be coming back. You can, you know, you have a little bit more to work with there, and you might be able to draft a guy, you know, you have some stop gaps there, and you might be able to draft a guy who could potentially take over at some point or play in a three-guard lineup like the Heat like to play if he ends up being better than they thought or better faster. You know, I don't know. I think that might be a better, like a shooting guard small forward type as opposed to the Kawhi small forward power forward type. Might be a better fit.
It's interesting because I think that's it'd certainly be in the minority there.
Yeah, because everybody wants just that pure small forward kind of. So I don't know. I don't know who I want. I haven't done enough research, but the draft's a crapshoot.
Oh, is it ever?
But we're pretty sure that they're not going to take an international prospect because the Heat never do, right?
Not in a long, long time.
It's been a while. Also in that draft, the Heat took Norris Cole, by the way, in the Kawhi Leonard draft. So.
Yeah, but you didn't need Kawhi Leonard because you had LeBron James there.
Right, and he went 15 picks before Norris Cole. But I always thought that the way that the Spurs traded for Kawhi, because when they traded George Hill, they still weren't sure if Tony Parker, that was like when Tony Parker was kind of going through that rough patch, right? And George Hill was kind of playing him for playing time and competing, and they just traded him. And like Popovich loved George Hill. So you hope that the Heat kind of have a similar conviction about a guy at 10. And if they do, you hope that it pans out. And the Heat certainly have the system in place to get a guy like Whiteside from out of the league to possibly most improved player in the league. So, but then they've also like missed on like guys like Norris Cole. Napier didn't look great in his first year. I'm not ready to write him off. The Heat don't have the best track record with draft picks.
No. But they never really had that many either.
And they don't really seem committed to him. Like, Caron Butler looked like he was going to be solid. And then they traded him in the Shaq trade, right? So
I mean, isn't he though? I mean, he's still a contributor in Detroit.
Yeah,
he's had
exactly.
A pretty cool career.
And you can imagine how like being with that original coaching staff, then getting traded, that could have that could have hurt his career. He could have taken a step back in his development there. If he was never traded, he could have been a potential All-Star.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
I think we all saw that potential when he was first with the Heat.
Yeah, I mean, I know the comparisons to Paul Pierce were being tossed around at that point, and I certainly think he could have lived up to that. And I think, you know, you look at how Stan Van Gundy, you know, sought him out this past offseason. You know, he saw something in him when he first coached him that first year. I mean, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't have been. If we had kept that same coaching staff and we hadn't made that huge trade for Shaq, you know, I think he could have thrived here. And who knows, man? You know, Lamar Odom was a key component.
Yes.
Of those Lakers teams, and he was a pretty big piece of what was going on down here.
He was a big signing. Well, he was only there for a year, 2 years.
Yeah,
it was 1 year. Yeah, it's 1 year. Yeah,
a phenomenal year. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was such a strange way how that all worked out. How they kind of built the Clippers and totally tricked him into signing. Because remember they signed Elton Brand to an offer sheet.
Yes.
And then when they matched, they were like, oh, well, you already got, you know, Corey Maggette to a long-term deal. You can only afford two of them. I guess maybe we'll make a deal for Lamar Odom. And then they couldn't match, of course, and it worked out perfectly. You always wonder whether or not Riley had that intention all along. But I mean,
of course he did. He's a mastermind. and that kind of idea, if the Heat do even take a guy at 10, I talk about trading your 10th. The 10th pick for maybe a future asset. If the Heat could take a guy at 10, that's still an asset. You know, they could still flip that guy for a future asset. So either way, I think it's huge that the Heat actually have something and a whole other avenue in which to add somebody. But I think the perimeter needs to be the target there.
I'm looking at Kawhi Leonard's, like the games played his rookie year and throughout his whole career. He's never played more than 65 games in a season. Is that just by design there? 66 games, sorry. He played 66 games last season.
Well, weren't one of those years the lockout year?
Yeah, well, I know that was his first year. First year, he only started 39 games as a rookie that nobody expected to start whatsoever. He was instantly into the starting lineup. He played 64 games that year out of 66.
Are you trying to knock Kawhi's resume here? Because he won the finals MVP.
I'm not. I'm just curious because it's like the art of a draft selection. It's so hard to predict, and I know nobody has an exact science. There's nobody who's nailed it. Even the San Antonio has made some gaffes over the course of their career, right. Whatever. Nobody has made, even Jerry West, when you think of like the guys who have made great selections over the years, they've all screwed up royally at one point or another. It's just the way it works out. You never know what's going to happen. There's personalities that have to mesh. There's fit. There's, you know, whether or not you can, let's say you draft a kid, he's got all the potential in the world, and then somehow a great free agent that you never expected was going to fall into your lap all of a sudden, you have to sign him, right? You can't just say, no, I've got this rookie who I drafted who I think has loads of potential.
Well, that's what the Heat did with Beasley, right?
Who did they pass up for?
Oh, no, well, they got LeBron.
Yeah, exactly. They were the exact opposite.
Right.
See, that to me is more proactive. That's why I think as a Heat fan, you've been kind of ingrained to think, look, I don't care who you draft. Anybody you have that hasn't blossomed into a superstar overnight, they're a trade asset or whatever because you can possibly sign free agents of a much higher quality here in Miami than you can in, say, places like Minnesota or Indiana or Oklahoma City. That doesn't necessarily lure many free agents.
So I think this draft talk has basically dominated the podcast. I don't know if we're going to get to what we wanted to, but I'm fine with that because I'm having a lot of fun with this. There's one thing that is foolproof that in a draft you don't want to do because it will be a bust 100% of the time.
What's that?
Don't draft the college star who's not great at anything but not bad at anything, who you know is kind of undersized, and you have a hint of whose game isn't going to translate, but holy crap, did he have a great March and his name is huge. And his team was really good. Don't draft that guy.
And who is this guy this year?
Frank Kaminsky, probably.
There you go. I agree with you there. I haven't seen enough of him to make that huge leap. But yeah, absolutely.
It also tends to be guards. I'm trying to think of the guards in this draft right now. Let's check it out.
Would you say Kaminsky has shades of like Kelly Olynyk?
Maybe? Yes, 100%. Yeah. And Kelly Olynyk was kind of like that, and he ended up falling, which is ultimately why I think Kaminsky is going to fall. Because he's kind of too close to Olynyk. But like a guy like Sam Decker, who had an amazing March, I don't know. I mean, he's always kind of been in that first round talk, but Draft Express right now has him at 15. Jerian Grant, the point guard at Notre Dame, another guy. Really good March. Big name school. His team was good. I don't know. These are the guys I don't really know about. Like that, I just wouldn't feel comfortable. I mean, Shabazz Napier was kind of like that, but. So here's an interesting situation. Let me know what you think. Let's say a guy like Willie Cauley-Stein or one of these centers that's not Frank Kaminsky. He's more of a power forward anyway. Let's say he drops to 10. The Heat have an opportunity to grab him. At that point, is it worth having the conversation of trading Whiteside? If you could sell high and get an all-star back in return for Whiteside.
Wow. It all depends on.
And then you can even just go. Yeah, you can even go Bosch and Nick Roberts as your starting lineup again.
Assuming everybody's at full health. I mean, I'm personally hesitant to make moves like that because I think. Sometimes, you know, if you keep a team intact, especially one that seems to get along fairly well, like this year's team, there's no in-house trouble, no clubhouse issues, etc. I don't think Whiteside's that kind of a personality at this point. He could develop into full-blown Reggie Jackson next year where, you know, he's like looking to get his and he knows Miami's not going to be able to give him much money. Let's say he comes back after a big offseason, trains just as hard in the next few months as he did the previous year or whatever, has a huge first few months of the season. Maybe he realizes Miami's not going to be able to sign him long-term and all of a sudden he starts demanding being traded to a team that's willing to accommodate him, maybe like Charlotte. I mean, is he from the North Carolina area? So maybe he wants to go back home and he wants a team that can throw a lot of money his way, etc. Otherwise, I'd say always keep the talent. You're always benefited by having more talent. If there's no,
yeah, he's a little bit more proven than any rookie. So
yeah,
and
yeah,
we know he fits what the Heat need.
Exactly. I mean, that's me.
Yeah, I wouldn't trade. I wouldn't do it either. I was just interested in what you had to say. The other situation is, and what I'm kind of going towards, is this scenario. Let's say the Heat strike gold, that 4% scenario works out, and they have a top three pick. DeMarcus Cousins is not happy in Sacramento.
Oh, God.
Let's say you pair the third overall pick and Whiteside and say, here you go, Sacramento, take it or leave it.
Yes.
I think you do it for sure, right?
I think so.
Yeah. I don't know, but...
Because you lose something defensively, and I'm not too concerned about Cousins' personality traits, whatever they might be, because I think... If there's an organization that could keep him in check or at least rein him in a little bit or get him focused, certainly I think it's Miami. It's certainly much better than Sacramento.
Jeez, yes. I don't know if I do it, though, because I think Boogie, he needs to have the ball. He will take the ball if you don't give him the ball. I mean, he will straight up just take, like, when he has the ball and you're kind of, like, it gets the rebound and you're supposed to kind of give it to the point guard, he'll just dribble it down the court. That won't fly in Miami, so they'll probably break him out of that. But, yeah, you're losing a little bit probably on the defensive side, even though Boogie's really come a long way on that end. I just don't know if, because he's so ball dominant, if that works with Dragic, Bosh, and Wade. I kind of like Whiteside just being that cleaner-upper guy, the guy that just cleans the glass and just dominates on defense on a game-to-game basis. He's actually developed into exactly way early in the season when we were talking about his breakout stardom, and if this was what we need to see from him. And I always was saying, well, can he not have a triple double and still dominate the game? And he has been doing that. So I don't know. It's really hard to say no to Boogie, and especially because Hassan Whiteside has such a short sample size.
Yeah.
But like a top three pick, if you can get Justice Winslow, I don't know, Winslow and Whiteside, that might be better than Boogie. I don't know. Plus, the Heat are going to go way over the luxury tax if they're Boogie. So that will probably nix it right in the bud, right? Like, they probably just want to do it.
The assumption then is, you know, Wade's salary will come off the books in 2016. You'll have more room to sign Whiteside long-term, etc.
But Boogie and Bosh, the posters, the t-shirts, and that on-court combo would be great. And that could be a cop show, Boogie and Bosh.
I love it, but I just don't see... It's hard for me to... I think you made some very good points. I mean, I know my first reaction is to say, yeah, make the trade. But yeah, maybe... You know, I think your point from a piece that you wrote months ago was what the next step is. And, you know, it's Whiteside becoming more of a fluid part of the offense where he learns how to pass out of double teams, especially yeah. raising the post, etc. I mean, those are great points. And hopefully we'll see that from him over the offseason.
DeMarcus Cousins is really good at that.
Okay. But again, then you're weighing the ball dominance versus a guy like Whiteside who might be more apt to being a role player, albeit a very, very, very good role player.
Right.
And we're not sure. Like, we didn't see Whiteside at his best playing alongside a guy like Chris Bosh.
Right.
At full strength. Like, by the time like Whiteside was coming into his own, Bosh was already dealing with some injury issues, and then next thing you know, he's out for the year. I don't know. Again, it's a tough one because, I mean, again, Whiteside is the role player so long as he's willing to be complimentary and share the ball with guys like Bosh and guys like Dragic. That's a better combination overall than even a guy that's as uber talented as Boogie Cousins.
Yep. I think Boogie has potential to kind of be like a Marc Gasol type where you can kind of run an offense through him because he can pass so well. And he's kind of got every shot in that limited range, right? He can hit it. I just don't know if the way the Heat are currently built, if they need that. Because they kind of are going to go with Dragic and the drive and kick game, it looks like. Go ahead.
I was just wondering there, because you make that Marc Gasol comparison, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, but, you know, Boogie needs those numbers, or at least he's always been a very high usage kind of guy. Is that just because they've surrounded him with such mediocre talent? And maybe if you were to bring him aboard a team like Miami that has all-stars like Dragic, like Wade, like Dang, possibly, like Bosh, maybe he'd be more willing to just kind of pass the ball and he wouldn't
I think he would.
Necessarily be a 2010 guy?
I think he would. Yeah, because he's clearly upset about losing. Like, that's If you want to knock Boogie, go ahead. But at least like when he gets upset, it's about like not getting foul calls, not getting he gets upset when he doesn't get the ball, but he also hates losing. Like he gets upset about basically everything. But at least he also gets upset about not winning. So yeah, I think if regardless, he needs to be with somebody that can also do something, I guess, is the best way to put it. That's why I think, you know, Marc Gasol has Mike Conley, who can just basically, you know, be maestro the offense a little bit, where Boogie basically has to dribble the ball down the court, because he's kind of the best one at doing it on the Kings, which is unfortunate. So, yeah, I don't know. But I don't want this thing to be like this. Like, we've talked a while about Boogie going to the Heat, and it's completely hypothetical, but it's not unrealistic. Like, it's probably got as much chance. Like, if we consider a 4% chance of the Heat getting a top three pick and then making that trade, there's like a 0.3% chance happening. But what I'm saying is that there's a chance.
There's always a chance.
Right. All right, let's really quick wrap this up. What was your favorite and least favorite moment from the season?
Favorite moment from the season. That's a tough one. Because you get so caught up in the whole thing, and all the injuries and everything else. So I'll start off with my least favorite moment of the season. I think for me it was Chris Bosh's diagnosis.
Same. Yep.
I guess it's kind of easy. I know it's you know, you think about it and how it affects the team, et cetera. But, I mean, you know, you pull off the trade, and you know, you hear later on from that piece by Ethan Skolnick that, you know, Pat O'Reilly knew all along that Chris Bosh was going to be out for the regular season. But we didn't know that. Right. Us on the periphery, we certainly had been privy to that kind of information. And so you pull off this trade for Goran Dragic, and all of a sudden you're thinking, my God, that's going to be a hell of a lineup. You know, Dragic, you know, Wade, Dank coming into his own a little bit, Chris Bosh, you know, Hassan Whiteside's blossoming. That's a competitive team in the Eastern Conference. That might be a finals candidate right there. That could be a team that could potentially fall ass backwards into a championship. And you know, maybe that's delusions of glory, but then all of a sudden it's sunk to earth very quickly, you know, plummeted meteorically after you find out that Chris Bosh could potentially be dying. And again, it's a couple of days of not knowing what the hell is going on.
Right.
And all of a sudden thinking to yourself, my God, you know, this is a great person, a family man, et cetera. And all of a sudden his life is at risk and you never know what's going to happen after that. So to me, that was the worst point of the season.
You said it perfectly. The best moment of the season, it's far and few to choose from. But, and I've given this some thought, and everything that I keep kind of going back to is that stupid interview that Hassan Whiteside did where he said he wanted to up his 2K rating. I don't know why, but I absolutely loved that. And I know we were like really concerned, oh, is this guy going to be like, is this guy a head case? Is he kind of just like this cocky son of a bitch? Like, what are we doing with this guy? But holy crap, was that a great interview. I love that.
That was
you probably have something better.
No, to me, again, and I can't help myself. To me, I haven't felt anything as high of a season as when Chris Bosh re-signed with Miami. And maybe that's a mistake in going before the season.
Yeah, I didn't think we were doing that. You cheated.
No, I mean, look, if you want me to look at the best moment of the season, I don't know. To me, it's all like turned into a big wash. I can't remember anything specific.
It was kind of like, to be honest, it was probably those first three games.
Yeah.
That's, you know, and as unfortunate as that is, and like as sad as that sounds, that's probably the truth. And that's why I don't want to admit it, and that's why I go to the 2K thing, because that happened in like, what, December? Like, yeah. At least that was kind of recent. But if I'm being completely honest, those first three games of the season, and it was all downhill from there.
I mean, I actually did a piece on the five best games of the season, and I went through the whole schedule trying to think of what games were, you know, really stood out as far as really good ones are concerned, and I wound up going back to that Dallas game that you and I have mentioned on a number of occasions. To us, that, at least to me, and I know you and I have talked about it, and I don't know if we speak for other fans that feel the same way.
Of course we do. But it represented.
I'm sorry.
Of course we do. We have a podcast.
There you go. I agree 100% there. It represented the pinnacle of what this team could be potentially. For one night, it was glorious ball movement. Like, a 42 made field goals, 33 of them were assisted. They shot almost 60% from the field, 40% from three-point range. Sean Williams was a badass motherfucker. I mean, he was killing people out there. That was just the best version of this team. And you're thinking to yourself, you know, Josh McRoberts is coming back. And once he does, he's going to be making – you know, pinpoint passes from the high post. He's going to be, you know, facilitating the Spursy type offense.
That's when he was McJesus.
Yeah. He was going to make this team San Antonio Southeast. It was going to be phenomenal. And next thing you know, Wade hurts his hamstring like three games later, and the wheels come off in glorious fashion, and we're never quite the fucking same after that.
That's a perfect wrap-up to the season. Well, thanks for joining me, David. We're going to have our season all-stars and awards, or I guess our season awards, coming out later in the week. Just basically the same awards that are handed out to the NBA, but we're going to hand them out in micro fashion to the Miami Heat. So it was good to get back on the podcast after a couple weeks off. Enjoy the rest of your day, David, and we'll talk again next week. I think we covered a lot, right? We covered the draft and free agency, kind of touched on it. We'll get more thorough as the offseason goes along, right?
Absolutely. There's much more to cover, so stay tuned to All You Can Heat.
Yep. And the Heat Check. Thank you for listening. You can find us on iTunes, find us on SoundCloud. Rate us, say nice things about us, and we'll see you again next week. Thanks for joining me, David.
Take care.